This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Naval aviator Lieutenant Wesley Van Dorn signed up to pilot big, heavy helicopters called Sea Dragons. And he did that for one reason. It would put him on a schedule that would let him be home for dinner with his family and tuck his son into bed. But as the Greensboro native soon discovered, maintenance and supply issues often kept him working late. Van Dorn started to document those issues in the quiet hope that one day they'd be fixed. Instead, he was their next victim. Van Dorn was killed when his helicopter crashed off the coast of Virginia in 2014. A new documentary tells the story and asks bigger questions about the failings of the American defense establishment. Zachary Stoffer is a director and producer of Who Killed Lieutenant Van Dorn, which is screening tonight as part of the River Run Film Festival in Winston-Salem. Zach, welcome to the State of Things.
Thanks, Frank. Good to be here.
Tell us about Lieutenant Van Dorn. Who is he?
Wes Van Dorn was a 2007 Naval Academy graduate, widely revered by everybody I've spoken to, just one of those people who exuded integrity and passion for everything that he pursued. He was a father of two boys and had a lovely wife, Nicole. And he found his way to this Sea Dragon Squadron, which is a Navy helicopter that engages in minesweeping, and he, as you mentioned in your intro, made some discoveries that things were not exactly as they should have been at the squadron.
Tell us more about this Sea Dragon. It is a unique craft, is it not?
Yeah, it's the largest helicopter in the military, the 53E. There's a Navy version and a Marine version. They're practically identical but have different missions. The Navy version does minesweeping. The Marine version will engage in heavy lift, hauling a Humvee or artillery around, plus can hold up to 55 troops in the back. And they're old as well. They've been around since the early 80s, and over that time have become the deadliest aircraft in the military, killing 132 people over that span.
The whole fleet has been grounded a number of times, right?
Yeah, off and on over the years, as there's been a string of accidents or a design flaw or an inspection problem, any kind of safety issue will ground the fleet, especially if crashes happen in close succession and Congress wants to try to figure out what's going on.
The fact is that you talked about the fact they've been around for a long time, since the 80s. The problem started showing up right in the prototype, so the Navy's been concerned about this thing and known about some of the issues since before it went into mass production. Am I right?
Yeah, the helicopters had different issues at different times. Our film is not just about one specific problem on one helicopter. It really looks at this helicopter where it's kind of been a sick bird for a long time. Different issues have plagued it at different points, and some they've never been able to solve. And in the case of Van Dorn's crash, which happened in January 2014, a fire had broken out on the helicopter, caused the pilots to lose control of the aircraft, and it plunged into the water. The wiring type on the helicopter is a known safety concern. People throughout aviation, both military and in contractors, contractors knew it, civilian aviation knew it, and this helicopter was built with this stuff on board. It's called Kapton wiring. The Navy researchers had known that it was a safety problem dating back to the 70s, but they built these aircraft with this wiring on it all along and didn't start replacing the wiring on the helicopters until 2004.
They've known about it all along, since before this one went into production. It's been in other aircraft, but they didn't routinely inspect for it.
Yeah, you know, wiring gets old, it gets brittle, it chafes. These are complicated aircraft. A lot of the wires are hidden under floorboards and above in the ceiling as well. So it is hard to see and hard to get to a lot of times, but you are supposed to check it out and make sure that it's functioning when it goes in for maintenance. But really, what we were hearing from maintainers at the squadron was that checking for chafing and things on a daily basis was definitely not part of the routine. And this worn-out wire had rubbed against a fuel line over time, and ultimately the actually a zip tie that was holding the bundle of wires together had poked a little hole in the fuel line. It caused a mist of fuel to spread into the cabin, and then there was an arcing event which unleashed what was described as a flamethrower or a fireball, and just filled the helicopter with choking black smoke and caused Van Dorn and the other pilot to lose control.
Yeah, tell us more about what happened next, because Lieutenant Van Dorn survived initially, but not ultimately. Talk about what happened in the immediate after the crash itself. Describe the crash.
Yeah, so this was a frigid January morning in 2014. One of those polar vortexes was gripping half the country, and Norfolk was right in the middle of it, Norfolk, Virginia. They didn't fly the day before because the parts of the helicopters were completely frozen and they were unable to fly. But they thawed them out. They take off around 8 o'clock in the morning and are doing one of their routine minesweeping exercises, where the helicopter's dragging heavy equipment through the water and they're searching for dummy mines. And at some point, this arcing event happens. They crash. And they were afloat on the water for 45 minutes before help arrived. Water temperature was about 40 degrees, and outside air temperature earlier that day had been right around zero or even lower. Help arrives. One of the air crewmen was killed on impact. Two made it to the hospital and survived. Van Dorn made it to the hospital but died awaiting surgery. And the co-pilot was found a week later with the wreckage. Van Dorn's wife, Nicole, made it to the hospital after somebody quickly called her and said that she better get there. This was not official channels. People were finding out over text message, over Twitter, and all kinds of other ways, but not knowing whether or not their loved ones were on board or affected by this crash. And Nicole, you know, is a powerful woman. She insisted that hospital staff let her in the operating room, and she was there by Wes's side when he died. And sometime later, after he was dead, the Navy walked in to let her know that he'd been in a helicopter crash.
The Navy, you say, has known about this for a long time. Wes Van Dorn was certainly aware of it as a pilot, and he was keeping track. He was hoping to do some. Talk about the records he was keeping.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, they joined the 53 Squadron thinking that it would be good for family life, but Wes would stick around and stay late and make sure people were doing their jobs as it was supposed to be done. You're supposed to follow maintenance procedures in the very prescribed order of 1, 2, 3, 4, not skipping any steps, not improvising or freelancing on any steps, but he was finding that work wasn't being done. He talked countless nights with Nicole about those concerns. We have text messages of him explaining what was going on. He kept a diary about people who weren't performing to the best of their ability and pointing out people cutting corners, things like that. He kept spreadsheets. He wrote memos to his superiors at different times as well. So we have all these records that give us a glimpse into the squadron as it appeared to a junior officer, somebody who went to the Naval Academy, somebody with integrity, who really joined the Navy and continued to serve, thinking everybody was bringing their A game. Yeah. To the table, and that really wasn't what he was seeing.
And he absolutely knew about it. Here's a heartbreaking conversation with Wes Van Dorn's mother, Susan, who is talking about the safety concerns.
We had actually visited several times in Norfolk. We were walking around and looking at the helicopter, and we had his son with us. And I said to Wes, do they ever have a day when you can fly your family and take us for a ride in the helicopter? And I will never forget that, because Wes turned to me and he looked me in the eye and he said, Mama,
I would never take you up in this piece of crap. And I just looked back at him, and I didn't know what to say, because that was what he was flying.
Susan Van Dorn is Wes Van Dorn's mother, featured in the documentary Who Killed Lieutenant Van Dorn? Director and producer Zach Stoffer is my guest. The film screens tonight at River Run Film Festival in Winston-Salem. So you say he's a junior officer, he's keeping track, he's worried about this. What happens when he takes it to the brass?
Well, he spoke up at different times. When we aired a version of this story on NBC News, the top helicopter, this was about a year after the accident, the top helicopter commander in Norfolk said that the Wes's notes and feedback never made it to him. So at some point, the chain of command stopped passing along the bad news. We actually got a hold of some audio tape that Wes was being interviewed as part of an investigation into another Sea Dragon crash that he didn't witness the accident itself, but was quickly on the scene in 2012 in Korea. And he talks about officer leadership being non-existent at his squadron. He talks about these maintenance concerns that he had and people not doing their jobs properly. Those were senior people that he was talking to. They may have filed some of those notes into the investigation, but what they did with it after the fact, we can only guess.
Well, your documentary also examines the culture around the maintenance or lack of it, and the fact that everybody sort of got that this is not anything we're going to maintain. Here's a clip of mechanic Chris Hummey talking about the aircraft.
I have so many nights where you have cried and bled and sweat and cussed at this helicopter. The mentality in the MH-53 community is that we fight a battle against the helicopter. Basically means she never wants to fly. And there'd be that day, that one glorious, beautiful sunset bluebird day where you would get four 53s all fired up at one time. And everyone comes and lines the hangars, and everybody's got their phones out. The sight to just watch these four giant machines all at once just rise up, all of a sudden become this agile, powerful behemoth that's just effortlessly flying through the sky. It's a sign of just strength.
Mechanic Chris Hummey, featured in the documentary Who Killed Lieutenant Van Dorn? Director-producer Zach Stoffer is my guest. The film is screening tonight at the River Run Film Festival in Winston-Salem. And you say that the trouble with this thing had been going on for decades. The Navy tried a couple of times to kill it. It said, we're not going to advance this thing, which actually led to supply problems for parts, didn't it?
Yeah, so it's an old helicopter, and eventually you get to the point, the military gets to the point where they want to develop something new. And the Navy figured that it would have new approaches to minesweeping and that this helicopter would be out of commission roughly the middle of last decade. And so as they're going through that process, they're starting to steer money away from the Sea Dragon, because why would you continue to invest in it if it's going to go away? The problem is those new minesweeping technologies never developed the way that they were supposed to. Those new projects were getting killed because we were sinking, close to $1 billion into one particular, remote controlled mine sniffing drone device that would swim through the water, being deployed from a ship that is beset with problems and is barely able to function. I know it can float, but not much more than that. So they're getting starved for resources, and those part supplies just start to dry up. That happened on the Marine Corps side as well. So you have people like Chris Hummey, mechanics, who want to do work the right way. They're all good people. They sign up to do things right, but they have no option but to improvise and freelance on certain maintenance jobs, because their leadership, their commanding officers, are getting judged by whether or not their helicopters are flying. They're only going to make the next grade if the flight hours are up. And so that creates a tremendous amount of downward pressure to just get it done. And that leads to additional concerns. We heard stories from other 53 pilots where there's a, or from other crew members, and there where a situation happened where they barely make it back to land in Hawaii, and there's, you know, stuff starts leaking and they're having problems, may have to ditch an aircraft at sea and find that a particular hose had been basically taped together with some material that they weren't authorized to be using. Yesterday, a guy, not a helicopter pilot, but somebody who was at our screening in Greensboro, mentioned that an aircraft that he took care of when he was in the Army, they solved a problem with dental floss and duct tape. So these are the kinds of things that are not in the publications, but are being done by members of the military because they're not getting the supplies they need because the money is all going to new technologies, new weapons, many of which are beset with problems and cost overruns and delays. So the money just keeps, we keep throwing good money after bad issues.
Zach, I got about 15 seconds left, but is the Navy taking this more seriously now? Anything changing?
Yeah, they have issued some additional maintenance contracts to take care of these helicopters into the future, but they are going to be needed until into the 2030s.
Into the 2030s.
Yeah.
Zach Stoffer is the director and producer of the documentary Who Killed Lieutenant Van Dorn, screening tonight at 7:30 at Haynes Brands Theater in Winston-Salem, part of the River Run Film Festival. Zach, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thanks for having us.
You can find out more about that film and anything we talk about at our website, stateofthings.org, a program produced by Anita Rao, Laura Pelliser, Dana Terry, Amanda Magnus, and Jennifer Brookland. Robin Copley is our technical director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.